You may never look your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood, a murder investigation based upon a true story by private investigator Douglas J. Hagman. Using the character Mark Stiles, Hagman takes you on a journey behind the scenes where the homicide becomes secondary to an underworld of satanic ritual abuse, child abduction, and even mind-controlled experimentation. A world dismissed as conspiracy by those who want to keep its secrets hidden, exposing the dangers, denials, and deceptions. For 5 years, a brutal killer remained on the loose, free to kill again. As Mark struggles to navigate the maze of bizarre twists and untangle a web of deeply hidden secrets kept by some of the most powerful and influential people in his community and beyond. You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood. Order your copy of this engaging novel today at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood.
And ladies and gentlemen of the jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No. Because I'm going to get him.
And welcome to this episode of the Hagman and Hagman Report. We're coming to you live from a radio and television studios here in beautiful Northwest Pennsylvania. I'm Doug Hagman, of course, at the helm with fellow investigator researcher and my son, Joe Hagman. Together we are America's premier father-son investigative reporting team. We broadcast live every weeknight. That's Monday through Friday from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time right here on the Global Star Radio Network. I want to thank you, each and every one of you, for joining us. Now, links to our audio, video, all the venues, because we do broadcast live on YouTube as well, and live on Blog Talk Radio, BTR, as well. You can go to HagmanandHagman.com. That's our internet show page, HagmanandHagman.com. And, of course, HagmanReport.com is our other, well, that's the news information and show prep, if you will. And just don't forget, we have two different websites. Bookmark them both. We dig deep into topics that the corporate mass media does not. In this headline-rich environment, we look beyond the headlines. We look beyond the sound bites and sound clips and the BS that's offered and provided to us, compliments of the corporate, captured corporate mass media, controlled mass media. Joe, I'm going to toss it to you. We got a great show. We had a busy week lined up. Great show lined up for you tonight.
We got a fantastic week lined up for you tonight. We have tonight from FTMDaily.com, FollowTheMoneyDaily.com, Jerry Robinson. He's going to be with us all 3 hours talking about the 9/11 connection to Saudi Arabia, the $750 billion in assets threatened by Saudi Arabia to be removed from the United States government. Also this week,
what you think of that?
Tomorrow we will be joined by Ammon Bundy's wife and Clive Bundy's wife for the first 2 hours, followed by Stan Day on hour number three. On Wednesday, we are going to have our roundtable discussion with Pastor Flip Benham, Pastor David Langford, and a few others.
That means Thursday will be...
Thursday's open lines. Right, right. And then Friday, we will be joined by Steve Quayle and, to my great surprise, Greg Evenson. I was shocked when I saw that on the schedule because last time I heard Greg Evenson wasn't doing so well health-wise, but to see that he's on the lineup to come on air...
Yeah, he's still not like 100%, obviously, but he feels the need to come on, and we want to give him that opportunity, Joe, right?
I mean, absolutely. It's been a while since we had a chance to talk to him. He's been in our prayers. His family's been in our prayers. His wife had a heart attack, but we were at the Hear the Watchman conference in Dallas.
That's right.
And things looked pretty bleak when we got that news.
Well, they did open her artery. They put a stent in, so that was a good thing.
But yeah, so Steve and Greg Evenson will be with us on Friday. But tonight, Jerry Robinson, again, Follow the Money Daily, FTMDaily.com is his website.
Yep.
And he is joining us tonight for all 3 hours. We got a lot to talk about. Jerry is an author, speaker, and he is a an economist. And I'll bring him on and let him explain to the audience exactly what his profession.
Everything he does, man. He's yeah. a man of many talents. But
we had the honor of doing a roundtable at the Prophecy in the News conference with him and Paul McGuire, my father and myself, and that was just a lot of fun. That's where we met Jerry at, was down there in Florida last year, and it's been great ever since. He's been a guest on our show a number of times and has brought in much to the table. Jerry, welcome to the program.
It's so great to be back. Thank you, guys. I appreciate the good work you guys do, and I'm really excited about tonight.
Yeah, we are too. We, you know, folks, Jerry's got his own audio venue, his own audio. In fact, Jerry, why don't you tell our audience about your audio, your broadcast?
Well, sure, you bet. Yeah, so the name of our website is simply followthemoney.com. Followthemoney.com will get you there. We have a few different websites, but that gets you right to our website. Our company is Follow the Money. Our website, our podcast is Follow the Money Weekly. It's a weekly program. We look at mainly trends. I run a trend that, you know, Follow the Money itself is a trend research firm. We examine market trends, economic trends, geopolitical trends. We started back in 2003 as mainly a ministry. Since that time, our ministry has blossomed, and we are now running this trend research firm in addition to our ministry. So it's a wonderful, wonderful thing. And so what we do is we track the markets. We watch the stock markets. We watch the commodity and currency markets. We watch the ETF markets. And then we watch also certain geopolitical things that impact, you know, our wallet, impact also our faith. You know, our faith is so connected now to our money. It's so sad. You know, God knew that money would be the chief competitor for our heart. That's why he placed more than 2,350 verses in the Bible about money, wealth, and possessions, because he knows that it's the chief competitor for our heart. And so we worship money today. In America, we worship money. Anywhere you are in the world, we worship money. Money is a god. And so it's one of those things where we really need special wisdom when it comes to finances. We really need wisdom today because there are so many lies. That's what we're committed to doing. We track the markets. We track these trends. But we do it from a spiritual perspective that is very unique.
Yes, you do. And folks, sign up for the newsletter and bookmark FTMDaily.com and listen to the podcast Jerry puts out, because he does a great job analyzing the geopolitical and financial world through the Christian perspective. And that's what we do here at the Hagman and Hagman Report. We look at what's going on in the world and the news and current events through a biblical perspective, through a Christian perspective. And sometimes it's horrifying through that lens to see what's going on in our world today. We got a lot to get into. Let's start with the topic of the show, 9/11, Saudi Arabia's involvement, the 28 pages of the redacted 9/11 commission, and the law for the families to be able to sue the Saudi Arabian government for their involvement in 9/11. What do you make of all this? Let's start with the lawsuit first, the family suing, being able to sue the Saudi government. What do you think about that?
Well, I think that it's really sad, because earlier today I had the great honor of interviewing Senator Bob Graham. He is an individual who left the Senate, the United States Senate, in 2005. He is from the state of Florida. He was a governor of Florida. He was the senator of Florida. He left in 2005. But during his tenure there at the Senate, he actually was the head or the chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee. And if you know how Washington worships the warfare state, you know that the Senate Intelligence Committee is one of the king's chairs in Washington. So this guy had a very interesting vantage point from which to view the world. And so he knows a lot of things that you and I will never know, because they're classified. He also sat upon the 9/11 inquiry, the congressional or the Senate inquiry, and that was he was the co-chair. Yeah, he was the co-chair of that. So he actually had a hand in writing the 28 pages that people are now, you know, clamoring to get released. It's ironic that since Bob Graham has left Washington in 2005, He has been working tirelessly, writing books and trying to help the American people by getting these 28 pages that contained who financed 9/11 to the American people so they can see them. And that's really what this is all about. There are 28 pages that the Bush administration in 2002, and before everybody shuts down with their Bush-Obama, let's make sure that we remember that Republicans and Democrats are all the same in the end because they all serve the same corporate master. So let's not get funny about Republicans and Democrats. Anyway, it was the Bush administration in 2002 that had those 28 pages sealed. They had them sealed. Now, if you go to online, if you look at a website like 28pages.org, they're simply an organization that's trying to raise awareness about the 28 pages. If you go there, they have quotes of the congressmen and the senators who have read the 28 pages. There are many of them, but not very many. You'd be surprised how very few people actually care in our government to go look and see who financed 9/11, and that's what's in these 28 pages. In 2002, the Bush administration decided that those pages, in particular, needed to be classified so that the American people could not see them. And within 12 months of that classification, the United States began gearing up for war with Iraq. Iraq, by the way, who was a mortal enemy, Saddam Hussein, who was a mortal enemy of the Saudis. So we go and we bomb Iraq, and this whole time, Bob Graham and others like him who had read the 28 pages were saying, no, this is all wrong. We've got it wrong. We're going the wrong way. The details are in these 28 pages. Well, let's speed up to 15 years later. Suddenly, right, after these pages have been under lock and key, after Graham has been, and other guys like him, I don't want to single him out, Bob Kerry is another senator who's been out there, Walter Jones is another congressman representative who's been out there, Tom Massey has been out there. I mean, there are guys who have went in, and by the way, to view these 28 pages, you have to go into a room where you cannot bring a pen, you cannot take notes, and you cannot have anything with you in the form of, encyclopedias or the internet in order to look things up. So you have to read. There you go. Just like it. And so people who have gone in to read these 28 pages, these congressmen and senators, those who have read them have said that it changes their entire worldview. You can go to 28pages.org or just Google, 28 pages senators and just see what people have said who've read these pages. So, there's nothing in them, according to those who have read them, and including the guy who wrote them, Bob Graham and others, there's nothing in it that would compromise national security, but it will embarrass the United States. And it will also embarrass our allies, quote unquote, i.e. Saudi Arabia, according to those who have read it. So why is the corrupt corporate media just now getting around to realizing that there are 28 secret pages? Because up until this time, all we have been hearing about is what? We've been hearing about Iran, and we've been hearing about Syria. We've been hearing about all of Saudi Arabia's enemies, right? Do you know who wants Assad gone more than anybody else? Saudi Arabia. Do you know who wants Iran gone more than anybody else besides the Christians?
Saudi Arabia.
Saudi Arabia, right? So Saudi Arabia, so how does Saudi Arabia accomplish those goals? Well, that goes back to something we can talk about later, but that we've talked about it before, the petrodollar system. But anyway, I've been talking for a while. Maybe you have other questions.
Well, I guess I'd ask you the Bush-Saudi connections, how the Bush-Saudi connections influenced the censorship of those 28 pages. And also, that plays into the involvement of our government, potentially, in 9/11. How much has changed from the Bush administration to the Obama administration as far as our relationship with Saudi Arabia?
There was a wonderful book put out. It's a terrible book to read. I mean, it's terrible information, but it's a very important book, and it's called The House of Bush, The House of Saud.
Yep, have it.
It's a very important book, and it explains the connection that exists between the Bush and the House of Saud family, the Saud family. Obama, from the very beginning, has been unwilling to do some of the bidding for Saudi Arabia that Bush had done so willing. Saudi Arabia, up until the time of Obama, really didn't have much in the way of a military. I mean, they always had a military, but it was never the size that it is today. I mean, right now, today, in 2016, Saudi Arabia is the world's number one arms importer. Now, you won't hear that on Fox News because the number two owner of Fox News is Alawid bin Talal, who happens to be the Saudi royal family. By the way, yeah. Fox News hates Iran, right? And everybody who watches Fox News is told they're supposed to hate Iran. They've never been to Iran. They don't know any Iranian people, but they know that they don't like Iran. And that's what happens when you watch Fox News. Why? Because who finances Fox News, right? And so when we say corrupt media, we're talking across the board. I mean, it's everywhere, not just Fox News. But anyway, the Saudis have a tremendous lobby that is not talked about. In Obama's time, we have now seen the Saudis go from this very dependent kingdom upon the United States to, it's kind of growing up. It's kind of like a toddler. It's almost kind of growing up now and saying, you know what, we're no longer dependent upon you. This deal that we brokered with you back in the 70s where we sell all of our oil and dollars and we then take all of the money that we make and we put it into U.S. treasuries to prop up your debt markets. You know, we've got other suitors now. We've got Russia. They've made some offers. And we have China. China, you know, is a potential suitor as well. And the European Union, they want to be our buddy now too. So suddenly the U.S. isn't the only game in town. And now the U.S. has to decide, you know, is it okay that they may have been involved in 9/11 and we continue our relationship with them to keep our cheap oil, to keep our artificial dollar demand, and to keep some sort of semblance of sanity in the region, if you want to call it that? Or do we want to go ahead and release the pages, all of them without redacting them, and let the chips fall where they may? And that's what's before the Congress right now. That's why this is such a very dangerous time.
And if I can add, throw some additional facts in here for our listeners, Prince Bandar bin Sultan Abdul Aziz, he was a Saudi Arabian ambassador to the United States back on 9/11. He was 52 years old back then. He was known as the Arab Gatsby. He was a son of Saudi Arabian Defense Minister Prince Salman, nephew of King Fahd, and grandson of Abdul Aziz, the guy that actually was selected and placed as the founder of Saudi Arabia, if you will. At 10 p.m. on 9/12/2001, the day after 9/11, George Tenet placed a call to Bandar, Prince Bandar, and said, "Hey, got some news for you. A little bit of bad news, you know, 15 of the 19 hijackers were your guys." Well, you know, now people might say, okay, things happen. Well, Bandar, if you look back at Bandar, at this guy, at who Prince Bandar bin Sultan Abdul Aziz is and what he's done, he is a guy that played racquetball pretty consistently with Colin Powell back in the late 70s. This is how far this incestuous relationship goes back. And he was also involved in covert ops for Bill Casey back in the 70s under Ronald Reagan, and was in constant contact with both Condoleezza Rice and Colin Powell on 9/11, and of course was present in the Truman Balcony meeting on 9/13, and was responsible for the flipping Saudi exodus that got these idiot moron family members of the Arab hijackers out of the United States while no one else in the country could fly.
Yeah, one thing that's rarely talked about is the, as you said, the exodus of the bin Laden family and Saudi Arabian royalty. The Bush administration, while all in the FAA, had grounded all domestic and international flights. The only flights that took place were getting the bin Ladens and the Saudi Arabian royalty out of America.
That's right. And, you know, just I can go on and on and on. This goes back to Carter. This goes back to Ford. This goes back to Rockefeller. This goes back to the 1970s, early 70s. This goes back into the Nixon White House, essentially. This goes back into, I mean, you could take this back as far as you want to the genesis of Saudi Arabia, but the bottom line is what happened was the covert internet or the criminal cabal of the CIA created this monstrous Islamic weapon that really turned itself onto America. And Jimmy Carter, and if you follow the money end of this is just absolutely incredible. It involves BCCI, the bank of I can't remember the name of that what that stands for, Congress of anyway, but this goes back to the fact that oil was discovered in Saudi Arabia back in 1938, and of course, between 1970, oil imports, U.S. oil imports, there were 33.2 million barrels a day in 73 after the coziness between Nixon, Kissinger, and the Saudis. The oil imports rose to 6.2 million barrels a day. So this goes back to oil, this goes back to money, this goes back to greed, this goes back to this criminal cabal. And by the way, while we're on the Saudi report, and I don't mean to take your time up here, but it just really hacks me off. Bernie Sanders, for all you Sanders supporters out there, and this is for you, Larry, out there, not Larry from Santa Clarita, no, Larry locally here. Larry wears a Bernie Sanders shirt and, you know, the rainbow flag and whatever. Let me tell you something, Larry. See, Sanders doesn't even have the cojones to read the Saudi 9/11, the Saudi report, the 28 pages. You know why? Because if he read it, then he'd have to answer questions about it, and he doesn't want to do that, so he doesn't read it. How's that for a leader? Go ahead, sir.
Well, I think I don't have much to say about Bernie. I mean, but as far as the seriousness of the current problem that we're having with Saudi Arabia, if we were on a rank it from a 0 to 10, I'd say right now we're about an 8. And the reason being is that, again, we don't hear about Saudi Arabia in the mainstream press. That is not kosher. That is not allowed. I mean, in fact, if you even look at some of the responses that have come to this, it's very, very bizarre. I mean, they have asked the Speaker of the House, Paul Ryan, they have asked him what he thinks about whether or not the victims of the families on 9/11 should be allowed to have some sort of access to the evidence and then be able to use that evidence in some way to hold someone accountable who murdered 3,000 people in America. And you see, we are so corrupt now. We are so completely corrupt because we bomb other nations, we bomb other civilians, and we don't want to get sued ourselves. So we have to say, no, we can't sue Saudi Arabia, because if we do that, then they'll be able to sue us. But forget the fact that the Supreme Court, the legislative branch of our government, just said that it's okay to sue Iran because they don't have sovereign immunity. You see how this works? If you're in the club, you get sovereign immunity. But if you're not in the club, you know that's how it works. And unfortunately, that one of the things that we really despise now, as a Christian, one of the things I truly despise is when I sense that Saudi propaganda has leaked into the evangelical world. And I will tell you that I believe that there is Saudi propaganda inside of the American church, something outrageous, and they don't realize it. You know, remember, it was Saudi Arabia who attacked Israel in 1948, not Iran. It was Saudi Arabia who attacked Israel in 1967, not Iran. It was Saudi Arabia who influenced the attack on the in 1973. It was Saudi Arabia who has always been the one who has been the number one exporter of terror. It's just that the corrupt mainstream media has a deal not to tell you about that. But suddenly that's changing. And that means that we are probably on the cusp of something pretty big.
Getting back to the legal issue of the ability for individuals to sue governments if this legislation were to pass, and I don't want to get too derailed off this main premise of the conversation, but the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, does that not allow corporations who are legally looked at as individual entities or persons? Doesn't that not allow corporations to sue international governments?
You see, that's how it works. This whole entire thing is run by corporations. And yes, to address that, yes, that, but there's great irony in that. The fact that Obama would say that he supports the Trans-Pacific Partnership with its clause to allow corporations to sue foreign governments if they feel that their profit potential is getting crimped, but if a foreign government actually kills your mother, your father, your sister, your brother, and does it willfully, that doesn't really count. You see, you're not a corporation. Corporations are the people. You're not really the people. You're somebody who works for the corporations. You're the one who buys their poison food. You're the one who buys their poison water. You're the one who props them up. You're the one who goes to work for them after you get, you know, tens of thousands of dollars of student debt after you've gone to college and bought the lie. Then you go into the corporate world, and then you prop up the corporate world, and you continue to consume all of their goods. You make money from the corporate world, and then you give your money right back to the corporate world. The corporations prop up Washington. Washington does not listen to you. It doesn't listen to me, not because we're not pretty and we're not worth listening to. It's because we don't have money. And corporations have lots of money, so they can wiggle their way right into the halls of power. They can get what they want, even if it's against you. They don't care. So, yes, corporations can sue foreign governments, and 9/11 victims can sue Iran. They just can't sue Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, says Obama. That's fascinating to me. And the part about the second biggest owner of Fox News being Saudi Arabian royalty shouldn't be a surprise to anybody. Last time I heard, it was 10% of Fox News that was owned by a Saudi royal family member. I don't know if that's the same now or if their amount of ownership has increased. But, folks, that should speak volumes about the mainstream media. We know NBC is owned by GE, which is owned by the government of America. We have, you know, Fox News, which is owned by part Saudi.
Yeah, percentage.
CNN, Ted Turner, a globalist. All these mainstream media, I mean, Disney is involved in the big six mega corporations. All of these people are globalists or foreign interests who are looking to bring America down. And it should be of no surprise to people that their mainstream media is bought and paid for and brought to you by those who want their agenda to be completed. And as you just stated, that the Saudi agenda is anti-Iran and anti-Israel. And, you know, sure enough, just like you said in your podcast and as you said today, people who watch Fox News have it embedded in their head that Iran is our enemy. Yes, they say things like, we're going to wipe Israel off the map, but when you boil it down to bare bones,
have you seen what's in the Saudi school books? I mean, if you look in the Saudi school books, you'll see the real stuff. I mean, this is one of the problems. I would encourage everybody, anybody who has internet connection, go to YouTube and Google or type in Saudi Arabia Uncovered, and type in Saudi Arabia Uncovered. It's a brand new Frontline piece that was put out that they actually got hidden camera footage into, or hidden camera inside of Saudi Arabia, and you hear all kinds of wonderful things. See, what's interesting is this stuff is just starting to come out. You have Frontline with hidden cameras in Saudi Arabia. You have Bob Graham on 60 Minutes on the mainstream press hitting Saudi Arabia. You've got all the mainstream media talking about these 28 pages all of a sudden after 15 years of dereliction by the corporate corrupt mainstream press. They haven't talked about this at all. Now, suddenly, they want to get down to the bottom of it because they're such good media people. And they want to get down to the bottom of these 28 pages, and now they want them to be released just suddenly. So the question becomes, and we've always, one of the things we've always been on guard of is this kind of language. Because remember, it wasn't until September of 2000 that the United States really put it on its radar to take Saddam Hussein out. It was in September of 2000 where he emerged from a meeting with his advisors and declared to the world on CNN, via CNN, that he was going to move from dollars to euros. That suddenly changed the dynamic towards Iraq, right? That really changed the dynamic. The same thing with Saudi Arabia. So whenever Saudi Arabia says, hey, we think we're going to dump $750 billion of your debt, the mainstream media responds by ramping up its attacks on Saudi Arabia. So what we're seeing right now is smoke and mirrors. It's the beginning. It's the very beginning. These are the rumors of war. But they may go away. If we don't see anything more, if the 28 pages get suppressed, because remember, we live in a 24/7 news cycle. Tomorrow it'll be something else. The next day it'll be something else, and the American people will forget. So it all depends, right? They can ratchet this down or they can ratchet this up. If they keep ratcheting it up, then we're on the cusp of a pretty big economic crisis, because Saudi Arabia stepping away from the dollar and allowing its oil to be sold in other currencies, and if they lower their demand for our treasury securities, our debts, then we're going to have to compensate for that somehow, whether somebody else steps in to fill that role, or unless we are going to have higher interest rates to attract more capital, who knows what that's going to mean. But the point is that this is not a good situation for the economy, and Saudi Arabia is a threat to humanity. They're a threat to the United States. They're a threat to Israel. They are not our friend. They are not our ally.
You know, if I can just say, interject one thing here, and this is something I learned. I don't know if this is in the 28 pages. I don't know if this is open source, but I was told by an intelligence individual, in June 2001, the U.S. Embassy in Saudi Arabia, their visa program was active through, in fact, this was active through July 19th, 2002. They allowed any Saudi to obtain a visa to the United States without actually having to appear in person at the consulate. Saudi Arabia was the only country granted such privileges. Now think about that. From June of 2001 right through past 9/11 and into July of 19th, 2002, Saudi Arabia had a visa program. They would allow any Saudi to obtain a visa into the United States without having to actually appear in person at the consulate. Again, this is the only country granted that privilege. And in June 2001, 11 of the 9/11 alleged hijackers, in June 2001, 11 of the 9/11 terrorists were here, three under this program I just referenced. So I didn't want to muddy the waters too much, but let me also mention this. On June 22nd, 2001, Karl Rove was the speaker at, I'm not going to go down that road. It just suffices it to say this. Rove, Bush, Powell, Rice, it's Colin Powell, Rice, the Saudis, the whole Saudi royal family, the FBI knew about this. They were fighting against it. However, both Republicans and Democrats were just outraged, or were a part of this, and the FBI was outraged over, at least the rank and file FBI was outraged over the wall that was erected that led to attacks. I said all that to say this: the history behind the Saudi and the United States, with respect to both intelligence as well as the banking, including but not limited to the oil, is heavily incestuous, and certainly, as you said, Jerry, potentially embarrassing for both the Saudis as well as the United States, and many families and many senators within the United States and lawmakers in the U.S., both former and current.
Yeah, and there should be embarrassment. You know, there really should be embarrassment, especially for a country like the United States that holds itself out as someone who promotes democracy. I think most people who are awake now know that's a lie, that we're not out trying to promote democracy and spread freedom around the world. I mean, if we were, we would be in places, you know, like North Korea. We would be in places like Africa, helping the poor. But that's not exactly what we're wanting to do. And we would be helping the oppressed. But that's not what we do. What we do is we go around and we take care of our colonies. You see, America is not a nation state in the proper sense. It's more of an empire. It more resembles the empires of old than a proper nation state. And the fact that it has so many subjects, it has subjects across the Middle East, it has subjects across South America, it has subjects in Africa even, it has subjects in Southeast Asia, it has subjects across Europe. And so there are many people who use our currency just like an old empire, and they also answer to us. And because of that, nevertheless, we hold ourselves out as a nation state, as a democracy, as someone who wants to bring freedom to the world. And yet we partner with guys like the Saudi royal family, one of the most repressive regimes in the world. You know, they're dictators in bathrobes. They're disciples of Wahhabism, one of the most literal and one of the most heinous forms of Islam. They have a theocracy. They crush dissenters. They have a thuggish government. They rely upon intimidation. They have unjust sentencing designed to stifle revolt. They use beheadings on Christians. They use beheadings and limb amputations without anesthesia. They gouge people's eyes out. They take their teeth out. They do surgical paralysis. They do not allow free speech. No one else can have any other kind of political opinion except the one issued to them by the state. They are punished with public floggings. Women are treated like property. Religious minorities have no rights. You cannot have a church in the middle of Saudi Arabia. You cannot have a church anywhere in Saudi Arabia. And so all of this comes out of the heart of Saudi Arabia and its education system, which teaches and promotes the destruction of Israel. One high school textbook written for ninth graders says this, quote, "The hour of God's judgment will not come until the Muslims fight the Jews and kill them," you know, unquote. I mean, those are the kinds of things that Saudi children are learning. That's where terrorism starts. It begins when 6 million children are inculcated with hatred at a very young age. It begins in the Saudi schoolhouse. And until we deal with that, until America, you know, mans up and says, look, we're not going to be buddies with a terror-linked regime, then we're going to have to deal with this. And again, the reason why we continue to deal with it, man, it just goes right back to the name of the website. It's Follow the Money. FollowTheMoney.com. You want to know what's going on? Trust movement. There was a psychologist by the name of Alfred Adler. He said, you want to know the truth? Two words. Trust movement. They can say everything they want to say. Roman Catholic Church says, we love everybody. But you know what? If they took 10% of their trillions of dollars of wealth, they could eradicate global hunger. I don't care what the Roman Catholic Church says. I trust movement. And to me, they have nothing to say to me. They have plenty of wealth, and they don't take care of the poor. They have nothing to say to me. And it's the same way with any of these guys in Washington. If trust movement. Don't listen to what they say. They lie.
All right. Did we just lose you, brother?
I'm still here.
Oh, okay. I didn't know if that was an intentional pause or...
Oh, I just came to an end, and then I didn't hear you for a minute.
Yeah, no, what we did was I cut the mic because I didn't want to have you hear the background noise. I was flipping pages here. Now, you know, everything you said, and I hope you just heard everything that our guest Jerry Robinson, Follow the Money. I Follow the Money daily. Check out his website. It's linked off of Hagman and Hagman.com. I hope you heard what he said. But I want to tell you what you're talking about, or what you began talking about earlier, the Wahhabi lobby, basically, which it really began in earnest back in the 1980s, involves, and folks, you can see this through the Council on American Islamic Relations, the American Muslim Council, the Muslim Public Affairs Council. Those are the front groups for this Wahhabi lobby. Saudi donations for Wahhabi extremism, the exportation thereof. There was a website that was actually collecting donations for the Wahhabist. It was taken down. It had to be taken down. But in 1995, just to give you a little bit of a kind of an inkling here of what Mr. Robinson's talking about, $4 million from Saudi Arabia went to construct the mosques in the Islamic Center in Los Angeles, which was named after the founder of Wahhabism, or actually the grandson of the founder of Wahhabism. $6 million toward a mosque building in Cincinnati. The Islamic Center in D.C., L.A., Fresno, Denver, Houston, also in upstate New York, 2000. the money flew to that construction. $325 million to mosques and Islamic centers in the United States, 80-85% under Wahhabist control. That's what was determined by the year 2005. And incidentally, Saudi Arabia spent $70 billion to export Wahhabism, their brand of Islam, since 1975 to the United States and other parts of the West. So, just so you know, we're talking, pretty soon we're talking a lot of money here. And, that's exactly what you're talking about, Jerry.
Oh yeah, no doubt about it. No doubt about it. Saudi Arabia is part of the problem. You know, they're part of the problem. They're not the whole problem. They certainly are a part. And by the way, we should probably throw in here that Iran is no friend either. It's just that Iran has been beaten to ad nauseum about its threat. I mean, we are aware that Iran poses a threat. We get that. And we know that Iran is very angry with the West. They're very angry with the Saudis. They're very angry with, you know, because it's a religious war. And I think that's one of the problems with this whole thing, is that had you gone back to the 15th or 16th century, and you had decided to get involved in a tangle, or maybe the 16th or 17th century, and you decided to get in a tangle with, you know, the Protestants and the Catholics, I mean, anybody on the side of the road could have told you that's a dumb thing. Don't get entangled in a religious war. And that's exactly what the Middle East is. You have Iran, who is Shiite, and Syria leadership, which is Shiite, Lebanon to an extent, and Yemen. And then you have, and then of course you have Sunnis, and they're about 80% of the area. And that, of course, is a religious war. So they don't like each other. They don't like each other at all. They want to kill each other. Saudi Arabia has books that say that, the Shiites are the problem. They should be killed. Iran feels similarly about the Saudis. So for the U.S. to be sending our children, our troops over to fight in this region, underneath the pretext of bringing democracy, that is an absolute joke. This is religious war, pure and simple, and we need to stay out of this kind of mess. And in fact, if we are a Christian nation, the way that some people like to banter about and talk about how we're a Christian nation and say this and that, and how, you know, how God's going to judge this nation because we are a Christian nation, you know, I would say that even behooves us even more. I would say, where are all the missionaries that Christianity has sent to Saudi Arabia? You see, for Christian nations, it's much easier to drop bombs on mission fields than it is to actually go out and lay down your life for the gospel. It's much easier to lay down other people's lives, and then you get to hang around and enjoy the fruit instead of actually laying your life down. That's why I often say that this is not a Christian nation in any way, shape, or form. If it is, then I don't want to be a Christian. If you look at the word Christian literally means Christ follower, Christ-like, Christ-likeness. And when you say it that way, suddenly no nation is really Christ-like. But we have a different definition for Christian, right? We've come up with our own definition. Christian is somebody who happens to be white and happens to be living in America and who happens to vote a certain way. That is what a Christian is, and therefore we need to get back to that, right? We need to get back to that white America that we once were. And that's what's so sad about this nation, is that instead of looking itself in the eye and realizing that God begins his judgment in his own house, the Christian America thinks that brown people are the problem and that gays are the problem and that abortion is the problem. They don't care about the porn that's going on in the pulpit. They don't particularly care so much about the brown people they're killing around the world. They don't really particularly care that they're killing the same people they're called to minister to and to witness to. What they really care about is the fact that gays are in front of them. How dare a gay person be in my city, right? Oh, give me a break. That's what the Bible tells us to expect. We're supposed to expect sin. Nevertheless, in Christian America, we walk around completely offended that people sin. And it's this symptom of wanting to have the outside of the cup perfectly clean while the inside is completely filthy. I think I know what Jesus would say to American Christians who feel that way.
Absolutely.
And so let me ask for a clarification on that, though. That's not to say we shouldn't condemn that behavior, but both we'll say that the moral aspects of homosexuality inside of my marriage, as well as we'll say abortion, we shouldn't be actively condemning that and attempting to put a stop to that. Correct? What's your take on that? I just want to be clear.
Yeah, sure. No, well, first of all, I mean, homosexuality is a sin, just like pride is a sin. You know, they're all sins. So, first of all, sin is sin. But when you take a look at the Bible itself, when you apply the prescriptions in the Bible, like if you go back to the very beginning of the Bible and you look at Genesis chapter 11, you see the creation. Remember the old Bible stories about how Adam and Eve, they ate from the fruit of the tree. And so we know what their lesson was there. Basically, a woman ate a fruit from the tree. She gave it to the man. God said, don't do that. And therefore, they sinned. Okay, we get that. That's an understandable story. Then you have the flood. You have men who are evil, very likely, homosexual, and very, very, very problematic, very possibly Nephilim, or very likely the Nephilim. And so there's a wiping out. We get that. That makes sense. But when you get to Genesis 11, you've got this group of guys who come out of nowhere, and they begin to build, the Bible says, they begin to build a city. They begin to build a city. Build a city. What they do? They build a city, and what do they do in the city? They build a building inside of it to make their name great. That's what they do. These guys come out of nowhere, and they begin to build a city. And the Bible says that God sees this, and he says, no, no, no. No, 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 no. This was not my divine intention. I never told you guys to build a city, right? That's the first city we see in the Bible. All of a sudden, just out of nowhere, these guys decide to build a city. Now, whenever you think about that story in the children's Bible stories, you never really walked away from that thinking that building the city and making a name for themselves was really such a huge sin, but that's really kind of what it was. Today, we have cities all over the place, right? All with our names on the buildings, all reaching high to the sky. And what's so interesting is that we have our own kingdoms, we have our own cities, we've done everything in violation of God's will. We are totally living in rebellion entirely in this land. And so we're in complete rebellion to God. He said, spread out. He said, fill the earth. He said, be fruitful, multiply, fill the earth. He says it over and over in the beginning. We always talk about the original intent for America. What was the original intent of the founders? What about the original intent of the Bible? What about the original intent of mankind? I mean, what was our original intent? We were supposed to be gardeners. We were supposed to not live in cities. When the first people built cities, God said, don't do that, right? And so now we have cities everywhere. We read in the Old Testament, we read in the New Testament in Revelation 17 and 18 that great woman who sits upon that beast, that harlot, that mystery Babylon, the Bible tells us, the angel says, she is that great city. She's a city. So the city itself is that great Babylon that began at the very beginning of time. So to answer your question very indirectly, but now I'm finally getting to it, is that when you have cities that are completely in rebellion to God and you put all these people into cities, you're going to have all kinds of chaos. That's why God said, don't do it. But we do it anyway, and we want God to bless our cities, and we want God to bless our kingdoms, and we want God to bless. And when he doesn't, we get confused and we get upset. So what I'm saying is that, yes, homosexuality is a sin. Of course it is, and it's wrong, and it should not be done. But there are many other things that are just as sinful, and yet they're completely silent about them from the pulpit. I mean, pornography is ripping this nation apart. It's ripping the church apart. And they don't want to talk about that. They want to talk about the gays outside the church. Why? Because that's how they raise money. You can't tell your tithers to stop looking at porn. You can't do that. What you do is you tell them about the gay people outside the building and you raise money from them. That's how it works. That's how it works. So,
interesting.
From the pulpit, we need guys who are brave, who will look people in the eye and say, you know what? The judgment begins at the house of God. If we want abortion to stop, let's stop having abortions. 50% of abortions would be stopped tomorrow if Christians, quote-unquote Christians, would stop having abortions. So it just seems like there's a lot of nonsense going on and the prescriptions in the Bible. And that's my answer.
And I saw a statistic yesterday about the number of abortions by Christians, and it was staggering, staggering. I mean, it was over 50% are identify themselves as Christians. So you're right. Thank you for clearing that up. Okay, good.
We got about 5 minutes left before our top of the hour break, Jerry. And with this 5 minutes we have left, what are the potential fallouts? Let's say Saudi Arabia were to pull the $750 billion in assets. What are the fallouts to the United States Treasury and the condition of the economy here on the homeland?
Well, that's a huge question. And right before, you may know that Barack Obama just got done visiting the king in Saudi Arabia. That was kind of an interesting timing. But what many people didn't know was that right before that meeting, he had held also another secret emergency meeting with his vice president and the head of the Federal Reserve, Janet Yellen. And they apparently they released about a 79-word memo. Very little details, didn't answer any questions about it, simply said that they exchanged notes. This exchanging of the notes between Obama and Yellen came right before the trip to Saudi Arabia. So we can only surmise that maybe it was about that. Saudi Arabia is the reason why we're able to print money. We print money because of Saudi Arabia. That's a very important thing to understand. Without Saudi Arabia and the current petrodollar arrangement that allows all oil, pretty much all oil, to be denominated in U.S. dollars, that means that's a real big hassle for the global economy. I mean, that's a hassle for Japan. Japan has to take in, they have to convert it to dollars, they have to pay for the oil in dollars, and then they have to bring it back, and there's currency risk, and there's all kinds of things that go along with that. So we say that everything has to be priced in dollars, and that seems kind of fine, but it's a problem. And at some point, it's gonna go away. And especially when the dollar is, you know, not very stable. Well, anyway, the reason why this is so problematic, and I'll make this very brief because I realize we're getting close to the end of the hour, is that Saudi Arabia and OPEC, the countries that trade their oil for dollars and then buy treasury securities, when they do that, they give the Federal Reserve, they give Janet Yellen or whoever's running it, they give them a permission slip, in essence, not a visible one, but an invisible permission slip. And what it basically says is that, look, you know how much domestic demand you have for your dollar, right? You can pretty much measure that. And you also know that there's a tremendous amount of international demand for your dollar as well, right, because of the petrodollar system. So it guides the Fed, and then the Fed says, well, if we print this much money, and they calculate it with their computer, right, and they say, well, if we print this much money, then we won't have inflation because this much demand exists, and so if the supply matches the demand, then everything will be okay. So that's why the Fed has been able to do QE1, QE2, QE3, and that's why they're thinking, well, maybe we'll do QE4, QE5, but they can't do that. They can't. This is the whole point. They can't do that. They can't do that if the Saudis and others say we're not going to accept dollars for oil only. We're going to take other currencies. Now, suddenly, all of the money, all of the dollars that are held globally, specifically earmarked to use for oil purchases, are now no longer necessary. Those currencies can now be converted into other currencies that are more useful, perhaps, or they may keep them in dollars. But regardless, that sudden slack in the demand, in that artificial demand, will wreak havoc upon the Fed's ability to print money at will, because now they're dealing with a different demand figure. And so if Saudi Arabia changes the total aggregate demand figure for dollars, the Federal Reserve has to respond to that, and they cannot print as much money without stoking inflation. Because if you put too much money into the economy and there's not enough demand for all of that money, then you create hyperinflation, right? That's how you create it. So that's why it's very important that we maintain this arrangement, because it maintains a big, huge international demand for our currency, allowing us to pull off QE1, QE2, QE3, QE4. Russia can't do that. You know, China can't do that, but we can do it. China can do it for a while, but we have the permission slip right now.
Very good. Critical information, folks. And you know what? Let me just real quick address a couple of people here I got emails from. Very quickly, this is kind of a left-handed comment. Yes, the airs over the United States, the airspace over the United States was closed between 9/11 and 9/13, except for about 14 or 17 Saudis, including the royal family, and their heirs from flights were from Los Angeles, Las Vegas, Cleveland, Orlando, Dallas, Houston, D.C., Boston, Newark, and New York. And that's the story on that. Two PIs, Dan Grossi and Manuel Perez, accompanied those individuals during our downtime. Sorry, we're going to be right back, folks. We're up against the top of the hour.